session number 16843,
Reel 3. When we got into
Commander Crisp, Reel 3.
Mm-hmm. That when we got about 2 miles out, pitch dark, of course, and we had one chap ahead, and I don't know who he was, and we flashed. He had a little flashlight thing, and actually we heard a plane. We heard a plane, must have come over, went overhead, and that was it. Because we couldn't pull right across the island, and then the boat started to leak. And one of the crew, I was a coxswain, you see, one of the crew, I don't know who he was, he started to swear and said, look, we're going to, we'll never get back. So what are we going to do? I said, well, we'll go back, we'll pull back. He said, well, you better hurry up. He said, oh, blow your brains out. And so he came up with his revolver, and another Australian, I think it was a sergeant, just turned round to him and said, you silly bastard, you put that down or we'll blow your bloody brains out. So we had a little mutiny, which is odd, isn't it? Anyhow, we pulled in, managed to pull in to the shoreline, and when we got there, we heard voices. And some said, that's all right, they're cretins, I can recognise the voice. So we pulled into this little harbour, and when we got there, there was paratroopers waiting for us. And there was a great, there was a, they had a gun mounted. God, Lord, and this chap had been threatening us. Thank goodness he took off his revolver and just let it drop into the water, you see. Otherwise, if he'd started up again. Anyhow, so we landed, and there we were, pushed into the, into a barn or something where a lot of soldiers were, so and so. And the German officer said, for every officer that escapes, we will shoot 10 others. Well, anyhow, we didn't feel like escaping then. And that was the end.
Just before we take it any further, can we go back to HMS York?
York, yes.
What do you remember about the attack on NAFs, and why did the Italians get through?
Well, you see, although we had harbour defences, we had no one to guard the entrance, really guard it. So they could slip through quite easily, I thought. There was a, when we had loop defence in the further forth, we had means of detecting anything that came through the gap. But we didn't have that in Souda Bay. So there was a gap, and we didn't have the ships. We didn't have anything, really, to stop them. So they must have come through. I think, I say I was called out when it happened. And the next morning, they found one of these craft, another craft, ashore. And apparently they had a detonator bar around the hull, around the bows. And from what I heard, a Cretan farmer or seaman, he'd actually tied a rope to this detonator bar and anchored the boat. And it was full of ammunition. But anyhow, he did a valuable service because our experts went ashore. And there was a complete boat. Complete. But the, you see, I was asleep when it happened. But I was pushed out, of course. I had to go in the Irie Rini Verna course and get the 5-ton clump. And, of course, heavy hawser, attach it to the stern of the York. But she was finished then, really. She couldn't do anything. The submarine came alongside later, probably 2 days later, to give her lights. And as far as I know, she ended up there too. I don't know. It's not very clear. So many things were happening. In fact, we hadn't got, on more than one occasion, we were actually repairing nets and in the middle of the harbour when these raids happened, really. But of course, we were only a kike. They wouldn't worry about us. The only worry we had was from the shrapnel from our guns. So we have no helmets, So we used to get bottom boards, which are wooden boards, and put them above our heads, just in case. But later, well, the Stukas took out all the batteries, bombed the whole lot out, then bombed the Port War Station, and that went what we call the XDO, the Extended Defence Officer. And, well, I can't explain it. They used to call it Suicide Bay. No one would come in. No one could get out. And everything that was there, there must be a lot of wrecks at the bottom of the shores of Suda Bay.
Can we go back to when you were captured by the paratroopers?
Yes.
How did they then behave to you once they'd captured you?
Well, when they got us, there was no food for anybody. And so they marched us back. We had to be marched all the way back to Suda Bay. And on the way back, someone managed to get an orange or an apple with our lot, and we all had a little figment of this orange that was on our way, and still no food. So by the time we got to Suda Bay, there was a German lorry, met us there, and took us up to the, I think it was Malamy, the airfield, where they had all the prisoners, you know. And I suppose I can mention one incident. We were very, very hungry. And shoes had gone, just had plimsolls on. And I got friendly with the Manxman. There was a Manxman there, group. And they had a little tent. But there was no room for the sailors, so we had to sleep outside. Cold at night, so we made the best of it. And the Germans used to give us sort of a bowl of something a day. I don't know what it was. That's all you got. Well, I felt very, very hungry. I was a bit of a rebel, I suppose. And looking round, I saw a German lorry coming in with a lot of food stuff going into their tent where it was. So I decided I'd watch it and see what was happening. And then I'd go through the back way and, of course, rustle a couple of tins, whatever they were, get some food. So everything went all right. I got in, went inside, and I got a lovely tin of peaches or something. And then something stabbed me right in the back. It was a German. He pushed his revolver into my back. And then he said, "Aus, aus, get out." And kicked me on the way out. I had to drop the tin. Anyhow, when we got out, I was walking along, and there was a young chap, young German, with him. Believe it or not, this young German came along, followed me, and guess what? He handed me the tin of peaches, which I took to the Manxman, and we all had a peach each.
This was at Malamy, wasn't it?
Malamy, yeah. I think it was called Malamy. And there we had to stay until taken by, is it, those twin-engine, tin-like passenger planes the Germans had. And that, of course, went to Athens. They were given some food there. Then from Athens, we put on a train, the usual, so many to a carriage. Then we stopped halfway. The Greeks had blown a bridge. So we are ordered out and then over the mountains again. There was no, we tried to escape, but we're so tired, you know, so we had nothing. So eventually we landed in Salonika. And we're there for 6 weeks in Salonika. Bowl of soup and a big biscuit. And that was that. And we slept outside because there's so many fleas in these army barracks. No, no beds, of course. And then from there, they gave us, well, what do I know, I think it was 4 or 5 days' rations. Then they put, I think, must have been 25 in a truck. Bundled us all in. Then off we went in this truck. Five, I think it was 5 days. We had one stop And I forget where the stop was. After 2 days, we all want to go to the toilet. And the letters out, all guarded, of course. Then we're coming in. The Greeks started to throw, or whoever they were, food into the truck. Jones didn't like it, so they fired their revolvers through the apertures. Bullets whizzing here and there. One chap was caught in the brow, but he was all right. And then we went on and on. I can't really describe it. Until eventually we came to, where was it? A German city. Oh, good Lord.
Munich?
No. I've been back there since the war, really.
Nuremberg?
No. No, it was just Hamburg. And when we got to Hamburg, we were all taken out, of course, and taken down below, and the Red Cross were there. Thank God for that. We must have been an awful sight. They gave us cups of tea and some bread and stuff. And it was very odd, because some of the women were crying. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
The German women?
I don't know what they were. They were just crying when they saw us. Dear, excuse me. And eventually, of course, we are packed away again, and they pushed us off to Lübeck. And when we got to Lübeck, there was an anti-Jew parade. And we were all paraded, and anyone with the characteristics of a Jew was taken out. And I must tell you, there was a chap, I won't mention his name, very dark skin, and they whistled him out. But we managed to get him back again. Then, of course, we were put in hot showers, oh, good Lord. And we went to this army camp, and I was there for about, with I think there were only five naval types there, four or five naval officers. And then we were taken down to Wilhelmshaven for a week to be questioned. Well, there was a usual bombing raids while we were there. And then after that, we went to Marlag. And that's where we tried to get home. We dug a tunnel. I managed to escape with them. Got caught after 5 days. Just outside Bremen. Brought back. Then I heard of another lorry going out, so I got in a moving furniture to a place called Vestetinki, I think. And with two others, I got in the furniture van, but we got out. But we'd only been out about 6 hours when we were caught. Back we came again. And then early in the morning, 3 days later, we are put in a train to Berlin, where we stayed in the station for about 5 hours. And then off we went to Silesia.
When you say we, who's we?
The tunnel party. Three Marine officers. That's right, three Marine officers, two ERAs, and must have been one, two, three, four. About four other naval officers, all naval. And we went down to Silesia. That was an army camp.
This was punishment for trying to escape, was it?
Yes, we didn't know where we were going, you see. So when we got to Silesia, we got into this army camp, and straight away, of course, we saw I think it was Sergeant Major in charge. We said, look, we'd like to escape. Do you think you can get some soldiers to swap over with us? We can take their names, etc. And then, of course, they're allowed out on working parties. Well, everything was going all right until the soldiers then heard that we were going to Kolditz. And they didn't like the idea. We met Bader there. He was on his way. And, we met the Canadians. Was it Dieppe? Canadian landing?
Yes.
That's right. Colonel Merritt and Co. Yes. They were on their way. We didn't know. And on our way to Kolditz. Oh, dear. Colditz. We had one chap, Lieutenant Commander, oh good Lord, what a brain I've got, who decided to escape. And he managed to get into the toilet and through the window. But of course he got caught. And that was the end. Cold as it was to remain there.
Do you know when you arrived at Colditz?
What do you mean, the day?
The date.
Oh, I can't remember that date.
Well, the
Dieppe... I was there for three... The Dieppe prisoners were coming in.
The Dieppe raid was August 1942.
Well, it must have been then. Must have been that time. They were coming into the camp in Silesium. And so they said the Royal had their handcuffs on. I don't know. This is the more or less a rumour, I suppose.
So you had been punished and sent to Colditz for attempting to escape twice?
That's right. Yes. Like the others, there was three Marine officers. In fact, the chap you're talking to me about, Hugh Bruce, David Hunter, and who's the other? And Darby Curtis. They were the three Marines. We kept that little group. One of our... Well, we always tried to escape in Colditz. Everybody at all times. But I'm afraid it was a long stay.
What were the possibilities of escape from it?
Well, it was very, very difficult. The thing to do, if you did escape, you wanted someone who could speak German, French, or something else. A linguist, you know. Yes. The ideal people to escape with were the Dutch. Naturally, you see. And we'd only been there for about 6 weeks when one of our chaps got in touch with the... who was the escape officer at the time? He wrote a book.
Reed?
Let him. Reed. Got in touch with Reed. They got in touch with two Dutchmen and they got out. They managed to escape.
This wasn't Steinmetz, was it?
Hmm?
This wasn't Steinmetz, was it? Commander Steinmetz?
No, no. No, no. This was our Lieutenant Commander, Billy, I know him by his name, Billy. Oh, I'll think of it in a moment. No, no, it was a very, very clever escape. They got out and they went back to Switzerland. Then we had many other attempts, of course, trying. And I was known as the ropes officer. I took over from an army type called Peter, Peter Story. And I was given the job of making up ropes for escape from bed sheets. Dick Howe was then the escape officer. And so I was ordered to, whatever length was required, he'd give me a party of men, the sheets and stitches, and we used to make these ropes. And whenever a rope was used, of course, I had to be there to tie the rope, lead it out the window, etc., etc., to make sure that the thing was strong enough and would hold. And the window escape was marvellous. Used to have a trial escape first. Put a table up against the window, and the chaps would lie there, feet out, hands on the rope, and they had to get out within seconds of the lights being doused. They had to be out and down. And there was two of them got out. Jack Best, he was on the rope, he got away. And the Germans used to call the Red Fox, Sinclair. They got out, but I think they were caught on the border, brought back. Then later on, when we relieved the guard, quite a long job, quite a long tale, Sinclair was out again, and he was in charge of the party, and they shot him. But it was top of the chest, I think. He got away with it. But I think it was about 6 months later, He must have had a brainstorm. He clambered up the wire and he was shot dead. Mike Sinclair. Mike. Well, all this has been written, I think, by Pat Reed, because he went round later, because we still then had about 2 years to serve. So he got all the tales from the various members. But there were all sorts of escapes. Wouldn't believe it, really, some of the escapes.
Why did they call him the Red Fox?
Well, because they thought he was like a fox, he'd always escaping, always trying to escape, and always being caught. Times out of number, we were caught. I was caught in the drains. When the Poles left, we bought their drain, I think, for 100 cigarettes. And Bader, he took over the drain party. And, of course, there were two lots. There was the French-Canadians, then there was party of three. Then there was the British, who had the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. Well, I was selected for the Navy. I was small, and I could get through the hoop to go through the drain. Little Dominic Bruce. Don't know if you met Dominic, have you? He's quite a character. He was the other one. And Jack, oh, I think he was an Australian or New Zealander captain. And we had the job of going into these drains, and you had to go through a wall, down into the drain, then paddle along up to your knees in filth and bend down. Then we came to a place where it ended, and we had to bypass it by going through a very, very shallow place with water in it. Your head used to go through the water, get right through, then go into the main drain. And I'm telling you this because there's a funny end to it. And it was Jack's turn to go into the drain, the main drain that led it, the sewer that led into a drain that went right down and out into the River Mulder. And we had to reconnoitre, so I made a little rope, what we call a Jacob's ladder, and we tied his feet with a rope and one round his chest, because once you got in, you had to pull him back, you see. And Dominic, Nick and I were sitting down where all the water of the camp came into this well. And, of course, it went rose, and it went through and down. So Jack went out. The water was low. Everything was dry. He went out. And we heard him bang, bang at the end. And then suddenly the guard ahead, about 20 or 30 feet up, heard what was happening, pulled back the cover, pointed his rifle at him, and told him to get out. He couldn't get out. So he yelled to Dominic and I, "Get off." Well, the first thing you do, if anybody's caught, you run away, you know. You save your own skins. Off went Dominic, followed by me. Then suddenly we stopped. He said, "We've got to get back. The water's coming up. He won't be able to live." So we pulled him back, got him back, took off the ropes, and off we went. But we were caught. The Germans had come down halfway. Well, we were taken into the courtyard, into the cell, stripped. We must have looked awful. We had black faces, black feet. And Eckers, he came in, he was their security officer, and just nothing in the cell place. Oh, it was cold. He said, "I want to know how you got in." And little Dominic said, "We're not going to tell you." "Nope, not going to tell you." So he went out. He came back an hour later, and we were getting cold. He said, "I want to know how you got in." Dominic Bruce said, no, we won't tell you. "No." He said, "All right." He said, "I'll give you one more chance to tell me." So Dominic Bruce said, "No." He said, Eckers then, of course, threatened us with death. And little Dominic said, "You can't do that, international law." He's very good, little Dominic. And eventually, of course, the third time he came back, we were really cold. Oh, shivering. And he came in and said, and in the meantime, we'd heard he brought up a guard. He brought up, I think, 12 soldiers with their rifles. He said, "You won't tell me?" "No." "All right, we'll take you out and shoot you." So out we went towards the wall, and we thought they were going to shoot us, really. But anyhow, he didn't. It was all bluff. And so we're allowed to go back to the mess, have a bath and everything else. Wash, rather, not a bath. And then the next morning, of course, we all went down to the civilian jail. I can't remember how many days jail we got. And we came back. And when
was the civilian jail worse
outside
than Colditz?
Well, it was just very, very small. Nothing there, and a very, very tiny aperture. Oh, not a pleasant place to be, really. And we were allowed out for an hour every day, that's all. And I can't remember whether it was 3 weeks or a fortnight. Long enough, anyhow. And when we got back, the commandant, senior officer, rather, he sent for us to say that the Germans had fined us. I think it was about £100 each in their money for damaging the drains. Well, little Dominic, this is the funny part about it, he said, I'm not going to have this. No, I'm not going to have this. So he put in a counterclaim. He put in a counterclaim, I think it was for £200 or £300 each for cleaning the drains that hadn't been cleaned for over 300 years. God. And this was what used to happen.
What was the outcome of that?
Nothing at all, really. Nothing at all. No, the colonel had a good laugh about it. But he said it won't work. And all sorts of escape.
How could they fine you when you didn't have any money?
Well, you see, they could do it through the... you got so many pfennigs a month. You couldn't buy anything with them. Nothing at all, really. And, of course, it could be charged against the government. But we never, never knew what happened. It was just silliness on the Germans' part, I think. But there were incidents every day, really. So many escape attempts, so many failures. One or two, I think, got through. The last one was a Canadian who got out. You've never heard of again. Then, of course, when the RAF people were murdered for escaping, the colonel then gave orders that we weren't to escape. Bard, in the meantime, Jack Best and who was the other two? Goldsmith and two others were building a glider. The glider was ready. Bard said it would fly, but nothing came of it, really. Oh, there were so many escapes. Chapel escape. Wouldn't believe it. In fact, the place must be absolutely a catacomb in parts. Then we had the eccentrics. We had Harry Elliott. He used to go down to the park where we were allowed to go. And he used to bring back all sorts of insects. Then he used to go around the castle where there was wood. He used to ball it low, put an insect in there. He said within 100 years, the castle would fall down.